From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. And on this day, Governor Paul LePage says he will not resign after apologizing to a state lawmaker, but some question whether an apology is enough to salvage the state's reputation. Maine lawmakers, meanwhile, disagree on what steps they can or should take to rebuke the governor as members of the public rally to demand his resignation. And the whole controversy was sparked by a seemingly innocent question from an audience member at one of LePage's town hall meetings. But there's more to that story. All that and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Governor Paul LePage touched off a major firestorm a week ago when he asserted that Maine's heroin trafficking is primarily perpetrated by blacks and Hispanics. Since then, LePage has been trying to clean up the mess. But questions still remain about whether the governor's apologies are enough to fix the damage. While some at the State House are ready to move on, others worry that a failure to punish LePage will only further harm state government and Maine's reputation. Steve Missler has more.
Day 8 of the biggest threat to LePage's governorship came with an apology. First to State Representative Drew Gattine, the Democrat who the governor assailed via voicemail with profanity and gay slurs. LePage then apologized to the state of Maine. He began by reading from a statement.
Once again, I want to sincerely apologize to the people of Maine and to the Gattine family.
But LePage went on to blame newspapers for his comments about race, the news media for baiting him into his action against Gattine, and political opponents for calling him racist. He expressed frustration, regret, sadness, and anger.
Being called a racist was a horrible thing for me. It was enormously hurtful. It hurt my family.
LePage paused after mentioning his family.
I will not resign, though. My family are behind me.
He paused again. He rapped his knuckles on his desk, as if to gather himself.
And I'm going to win this battle.
The governor took few questions from reporters. He was asked if he regretted repeatedly saying blacks and Hispanics are mainly responsible for the heroin trade. He blamed the newspapers as the source of his information, contradicting his assertion last week that he had ordered his staff to compile mugshots of traffickers because he believed newspapers had stopped running arrest photos of people of color. He was then asked whether he suffered from substance addiction or mental illness, responding to elected officials and others who have openly wondered the same.
I'm not an alcoholic, and I'm not a drug addict, and I don't have mental issues. What I have is a backbone, and I want to move Maine forward.
The response to the governor's apology was mixed. Democratic activists chided his pain at being called a racist, saying experiencing racism is worse. Others were unconvinced that LePage has learned from a controversy that has drawn widespread media attention, none of it positive. Earlier this week, a Boston Globe columnist dubbed LePage the George Wallace of New England, and officials in Massachusetts have ripped the governor's claim that blacks and Hispanics in their towns are pumping dope into Maine.
You know, we're getting calls from people that don't even live in Maine telling us they're not coming to Maine for a vacation this weekend. You know, that tells me that this problem is not remedied by the actions of the governor this morning.
House Leader Jeff McCabe was not alone in his skepticism. Representative Drew Gattine, who met with LePage Wednesday morning, said he never wanted an apology. He wants the repeated controversies to end. He wants LePage to resign.
We need a governor who can work with us every day to try to solve these problems. And I'm concerned that we can't go ahead for the next 2 years and continue to be in this constant cycle.
LePage's chances of surviving sanctions by the legislature are improving. On Tuesday, House Republican leaders condemned LePage's conduct and said it was, quote, a seismic event and an impediment to their conservative agenda. But when asked what line the governor would need to cross to bring about sanction, Republican House Leader Kenneth Fredette struggled to answer, nor did Fredette express confidence that he and his caucus had dealt with the last controversy initiated by the governor. Republican Senate President Michael Thibodeau also seem pessimistic, and Thibodeau says some members of his caucus are not yet ready to let the matter rest.
I think that Senate Republicans are concerned for the governor, they're concerned for his family, they want to know where things are going.
Thibodeau said he asked the governor to apologize to Katteen and Maine people during a private meeting he held Monday. He also asked him to seek professional help, asked if the governor had fulfilled those requests. Thibodeau said he wasn't sure. He was also unwilling to diagnose the governor, saying only that he knew, quote, something is wrong.
What I'm sure of is that we can't continue to have the explosiveness that we've seen.
Thibodeau also said that LePage should steer clear of stirring racial tensions.
We don't need to be throwing gasoline on that fire. And he needs to refrain from doing that.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The controversy, kicked up by Governor LePage's obscene rant in a voicemail, shows little sign of subsiding. A rally for decency is planned in Westbrook this evening. Lawmakers are hearing firsthand from constituents as they campaign door-to-door, upset with the governor's language. Republican senators are contemplating if what the governor has said he will do in response to the controversy is enough. Mal Leary has been following events since the North Berwick Town Hall meeting last week that set it all off. He talks with Nora Flaherty.
Mal, give us some history behind this.
Well, Nora, it started with a question from Andrew Ritchie. He's a black man that identified himself as a businessman from New York that had lived in Lebanon, Maine. That's not far from North Berwick, where the town meeting was held. We now know that he is a writer and comedian who deliberately set out to harass LePage at that meeting while he was here on vacation. He openly bragged on the website vice.com about baiting the governor into using racist language. It was at that town meeting where the governor asserted that over 90% of drug dealer arrests since January have been of blacks and Hispanics. That caused Westbrook Representative Drew Gattine and others to criticize the governor for using racially charged language. A reporter asked LePage about the criticism. That triggered that obscene voicemail the governor continues to apologize for.
So this was set up to some degree by someone who does not like the governor.
It seems to have started that way, but the governor's use of vulgar, obscene language in that voicemail has become the real issue. The anger in the governor's voice in that voicemail is so clear. He admits that he was so angry when he made the call he had trouble breathing. He says that to him being called a racist was the worst name he could be called, even though Gattine didn't call him that. He admits he lost it in that voicemail and has apologized at news conferences, on radio appearances, in statements. But since his loss of control has led some in both parties to question his ability to govern. But after calls for him to resign, he said today, flatly, he will not resign.
So he said he won't resign, but this isn't over, is it?
Nora, it doesn't appear to be over, and it may be with us for a while. There are options spelled out in the state constitution for removing a governor from office, and all of them, as you'd expect, have some pretty high hurdles. One is impeachment. That process requires the House to, in essence, indict a governor. The Senate then acts like a jury and by two-thirds vote can remove a governor from office. There are provisions also in the Constitution when a governor's incapacitated or impaired and has arguably a higher threshold than impeachment. The Secretary of State must petition the state Supreme Court with his or her reasons for believing that a governor cannot fulfill their duties. The governor has to hold what amounts to a competency hearing. And then it takes a majority vote of the Supreme Court to actually remove a governor. So it's a very complicated process.
What about the idea of censuring the governor? How would that work?
Well, a censure motion would basically be the legislature telling a governor that what the governor did in the eyes of the legislature was wrong or inappropriate, was a bad action. Some lawmakers in both parties have talked about that as an option, but the legislature would have to be in session to do that. I don't think you'll see the governor calling him into a special session for that purpose, because he has that power, of course. So they would have to call themselves into session, and that takes a majority vote of each of the four-party caucuses. So when House Republicans last night said they would not support calling a special session, that really means that's not going to happen.
Okay, so that's the end of that.
That's the end of that, but the problem, of course, is this legislature ends in December when the new legislature is seated. And a new legislature can consider any of the options that we've discussed. So whether the controversy continues is really, in part, depends on the governor and what he says and what he does in the next few months.
Okay, well, Mal, thanks for trying to sort some of this out for us.
Thank you, Nora.
And that was Mal Leary talking with Nora Flaherty. And last night in Augusta, some members of the public made it clear that they are unhappy with Governor LePage. About 500 protesters gathered in Capitol Park across the street from the Statehouse to call for the governor's resignation. Several speakers said his racially charged comments about the ethnicity of drug traffickers were dangerous, while his repeated controversies made him unfit to lead. The gathering at Capitol Park felt more like an intervention than a rally. While many called for LePage's resignation, some depicted him as a man at war with himself.
You are our brother, and you need help. Get it.
That was Leslie Manning of Bath, who then addressed the governor by his first name.
Paul, as our governor, you have irretrievably broken the compact between us. You must leave now.
The rally, dubbed Save Our State, was organized by Betsy Sweet, a lobbyist and therapist from Hollowell. It ended with attendees holding hands in what organizers described as a civility circle. And as we heard earlier, the incivility that's brought Governor Paul LePage the widest condemnation of his political career all got started by a question from a purported businessman at that town hall meeting in North Berwick. Turns out that questioner was more than just a businessman. Fred Bever explains.
Andrew Ritchie is a businessman. He writes software and does other tech jobs. But he's also a stand-up comedian and budding political provocateur from Brooklyn, New York. The 32-year-old African-American was visiting a friend in Maine last week, the same guys had showdowns with the flag ladies of Freeport, and on something of a lark, the pair decided to try to get a rise out of Maine's famously irascible governor. Ritchie says he was already primed to challenge LePage for his history of comments that many think betray a racist bent.
There's also this kind of like performative element that also appeals to me as, you know, a comedian, that you can walk up and kind of, this guy is like, LePage is like a thin-skinned, angry man that has these horrible values, trying to get out of the skin of this Simpson man in this very public space is just sounds hilarious.
Posing as a state resident, Ritchie asked the governor why he hadn't created a more welcoming atmosphere for minorities in Maine. And LePage responded with his first mention of the picture binder full of people arrested for drug trafficking he says were 80 to 90% black and Hispanic. That launched what Ritchie says was an incredible series of self-inflicted wounds by LePage, who continued to make statements to the effect that black and Hispanic drug traffickers are Maine's enemies, culminating in a curse-filled rant he left on the voicemail of a politician who's criticized him. Chalk one up for the power of comedy, says Ritchie.
The very idea that I could go on vacation and spark like a political controversy for a Republican governor in the state I'm vacationing in, that's amazing. All of this is unreal. And it's a joy.
Ritchie also recently produced a live show featuring comedians interviewing supporters of Donald Trump. He says he's likely to continue to look for funny ways to get politicians to be more accountable for what comes out of their mouths. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
This morning, before making his apologies, Governor LePage took another stab at defending his comments over the last week. In an interview with conservative radio talk show host Ray Richardson on WLOB, LePage was asked why he keeps bringing up race in the discussion around the state's heroin problem. And as Susan Sharon reports, his response didn't reflect any evolution in his thinking.
In the 25-minute interview, LePage was asked, among other things, whether he had any substance abuse or mental health issue, and whether he had ever entered rehab. No, the governor said, he had not. But then host Ray Richardson asked him something that others have wondered out loud for the past week. Why does he keep bringing up race in the discussion around out-of-state drug dealers?
Why does the color of the drug dealer, who in my mind ought to be executed, but we don't do that here, why does the color of the drug dealer matter?
Because all lives matter, not just black lives.
I'm not sure what that means.
That means it's white people dying every day. Every single week, we have 5 people dying in Maine. And believe me, some of them are not white. They're people of all nationalities dying. But the point is, this nation is caught up on defending only one ethnic group. What about the people in Maine?
The governor has said that 90% of out-of-state drug dealers are black and Hispanic. He bases that on a collection of mugshots he started saving in January. On the show, he went on to point out one of his other frequent statistics, that there are 3 babies born affected by drugs in Maine every day. Their ethnicity doesn't matter, he said.
If it doesn't matter, why bring it up?
It's a good point. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I'll go back to what my wife says to me. You're brutally honest, and sometimes it hurts. And unfortunately, it's the truth.
FBI crime statistics for 2014, the most recent year they're available, show that most drug dealers in Maine are white. Only 14% are black. On Wednesday, Maine Republican Party Chair Rick Bennett issued a statement praising LePage for apologizing to Representative Gattine and for acknowledging that his words were harmful and inappropriate. Bennett went on to say that Republicans do not believe that race should be part of enforcement of drug policy or any criminal laws. Justice is blind to skin color, Bennett wrote. But the governor's critics point out that he has yet to apologize for his portrayal of minorities. And for some people, that hurts. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Portland, efforts to bring a new minor league hockey team to the city have suffered a setback after the loss of a potential investor. But those working to bring a new team to Portland remain optimistic that it will happen in time for the 2017-2018 season. Godfrey Wood is leading the effort. He says that potential financer has pulled out for business reasons, but says organizers are speaking with a number of other interested investors. Woods says plans right now are to buy an existing East Coast Hockey League team.
It's a 2016 league with a team in Manchester, New Hampshire, and a team starting in Worcester the same year we're looking to start.
Woods says the pro hockey team would compete at a level similar to the Portland Sea Dogs baseball team and the Maine Red Claws basketball team, both of which call Portland home. Wood was a key player in bringing the Pirates hockey team to Portland from Baltimore in 1993. The Pirates were sold in May and have moved to Springfield, Massachusetts. That leaves downtown Portland's Cross Insurance Arena with no major tenant. And a day before a deadline set by Portland police, most or all of the people living in a longtime homeless encampment on privately owned land behind a shopping center near Westbrook have moved on. Police department officials said yesterday that camp residents would have until tomorrow to clear out, and then police would start issuing trespass warnings. Homeless organizations have been trying to bring residents into the shelter system or get them vouchers for reduced price housing. Allie Lovejoy is with Preble Street, an organization that provides homeless services. She says success has been mixed. Lovejoy says some residents aren't allowed at local shelters and others really don't want to be there.
Could be anything from not wanting to be separated from their partner to not wanting to how intense it is to have to sleep that close to right next to somebody on a mat on the floor, just, you know, inches from the next person over.
Portland police decided to clear the area after complaints about the encampment increased. And last year, a resident of the encampment was stabbed by a fellow camper. Meanwhile, a coalition of groups in Maine concerned about food being wasted plan to serve thousands of bowls of free stew made from produce that would otherwise not have been harvested. Sarah Lakeman, Sustainable Maine Project Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine, says Feeding the 5,000 is a global campaign to address the problem of wasted food.
We waste about 40% on average of the food that is grown for consumption in this country. And while food waste is not going to solve the issue of hunger, with the amount of people who are hungry in our country and hungry in our state, and we're wasting this much food, there's clearly something that we can do better.
Produce is often left behind in farmers' fields because mechanical harvesters can't pick up every single fruit or vegetable. Lakeman says Portland will be the smallest city to have done this event, which is open to the public. It will happen October 7th from 11 to 4 in Portland's Monument Square. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
We close out August with mid-July weather, quite warm. There will be a few isolated showers or thundershowers about this evening. The focus over the higher terrain later tonight, just a couple of sprinkles, areas of fog, rather clammy, mid-50s to low 60s north to south. Tomorrow, expect considerable cloudiness with a few lingering nuisance variety showers as an upper-level disturbance glides across the northeast, 69 to 79 north to south. Friday will be the coolest day since mid-August. Across the mountains, northern and down east Maine, partly sunny, with a few showers east of the Penobscot. Partly cloudy skies farther south, mid-60s north to mid-70s south. Saturday, very pleasant. Sunshine will be filtered over northern and down east Maine, but quite bright across the rest of the state, 70 to 80 north to south. Sunday, partly cloudy and warmer. Low 80s for most, 70s along the coast. And then we will focus our attention on a tropical system emerging off Cape Hatteras, which may be interesting. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Broadcasting.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Steve Missler, Mal Leary, Fred Bever, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caritti. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.